Hey guys, Scott here. Are you coming to Nerdtacular 2015? Are you interested in hanging out with me and other Frog Pants producers, podcasters, gamers, friends, fans, listeners, and more? Well, now's your chance to grab your tickets. All the details are there, and tickets are on sale at nerdtacular.com. Come see us at the end of July, if I can get that word out. End of July. That's the time. The place is Salt Lake City, Utah, and the beautiful Snowbird Resort. Go find those details and tickets while they last at nerdtacular.com. Thanks. On with the show. This is The Boop Show, some gaming news you can use for February 26th, 2015. I'm Scott Johnson. Cold. Oh my gosh. Boom! Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. As you can tell, I am under the weather. This is actually better than it was about an hour ago. My voice was shot. I couldn't talk. You wouldn't have heard anything. It was all raspy. In fact, I can kind of fake it. If I get real loud like this, you can hear it go up. And I was not going to not do a show today, so I'm here for you guys, okay? I'm here for you. I'm also here for the game that tore me away at least a little bit from Hand of Fate. I talked to you guys about Hand of Fate last week and how it's an early contender for certainly one of the best things I've played this year so far. I think by the end of the year, that'll hold up. But I have dug deep and dipped my toe into the Homeworld Remastered Collection thing, which is Homeworld 1 and 2. Homeworld 1 coming out in, what, 99? Homeworld 2 was a couple years later. They've remastered it. This was all part of that THQ thing. It was auctioned off, purchased, and swooped up by the folks over at... Gearbox. Thank you, Brain. Thank you for being late, but you still had the answer. Gearbox. And then re-released, much to many fans' happiness, because it appeared as progression went along and we sort of followed its development that they were going to be very true to the original, but update everything that makes sense to update. Graphics are hugely improved. This thing runs on 4K displays and beautiful. Oh my gosh. The texturing, the lighting, just all that stuff is amazing. It's as it should be. All the right resolutions and aspect ratios and all that stuff. And, what they left intact is also important, like the incredible story and the great gameplay and the awesome music. The graphics just look insane, and the game is as good as I remember it being. It is easy to point to that game, especially in this form, and realize that the core of it is, it belongs on the classics list. Like, there is a list of games, and, you know, there are things like Doom and probably Quake and Super Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time. And a few others, the first Half-Life, you know. There's certain games that belong on a list of all-time great games that hold up no matter when you play them. Many games lose their luster, like movies, right? They seem great when you saw it, but man, you may have liked Last Action Hero the day you saw it, but boy, that movie sure doesn't hold up, for example. These games hold up. They're like a perfect movie. You can see them again and again, and it doesn't matter how old it is. Homeworld totally is that game. It's freaking rad, and it's totally worth the money, and you should get it. It's on Steam, and if you really want to be a purist and play the really old version of the game, like before they had the widescreen ratio and before the video cards could do much and the textures are low res and all that stuff, that's in there as well for both 1 and 2. And there's a multiplayer component that combines both games into multiplayer components. They list it as in beta, which I think that probably means they just wasn't quite cooked by the time this released in terms of the multiplayer online. But that game never had multiplayer online before, so I'm happy to take whatever they give me. It's awesome. It's what I wish Eve was. It's what I wish all my space games were. All of them are cool in their own right. They all are beautiful or interesting or whatever they are, but none of them have ever felt like Homeworld to me. And it's an RTS. It's not even like an adventure-y game. It's not, you know, Freelancer was awesome. There's some many great games in the genre, but none of them have ever made me, or in multiple genres, but none of them have made me feel the way that Homeworld made me felt. feel and the way it makes me feel now. So I cannot freaking recommend that enough. Stay tuned also after the news here. We've got an awesome interview with my friend Jeff Cannata. You may know him from the DLC podcast, things in the past like the Totally Rad Show, and currently We Have Concerns, among other things. He's awesome, and we hooked up a couple years ago in a very platonic sense at BlizzCon, and we knew we'd known each other kind of online before that, but once we had some time together, we realized, oh yeah, well, this is a guy I'd hang out with all the time. So I brought him on to talk about the Order 1886 and kind of the flack that game's getting, and then some thoughts from his perspective, which I think you'll find interesting. So that's coming up soon. It's also real fun to listen to because I'm not sick in that interview and I don't sound like this. So that'll be a little bit weird for some of you. All right? All right. Tuck in. It's time to get moving. Okay. Hey, look at this. Those gold Mario amiibos, they're confirmed. That is a deal. I know we talked about it before, but it wasn't confirmed. Now it's confirmed. It is a Walmart exclusive. You'll get this nowhere but Wally World. And it's a little gold dude. It comes out March 20th, and it comes out alongside the Wii U game Mario Party 10. And will be, one would presume, used in some unique way in Mario Party 10. Else, why would they have it come out at the same time? That's exciting, right? Oh, that gives me an opportunity. Take the envelope here. I want to thank a fan of the show, David Ellis, a.k.a. The Remora, is his nickname. He snagged me the complete Zelda collection of amiibos and sent them to me, which was the sweetest thing ever. I was having a hard time finding those, at least at the time. And he just wanted to do it out of the kindness of his heart and a way to kind of give back to the shows that he likes. And now I have these awesome ones, especially the Toon Link, which is my favorite. So huge thanks goes out to him. That was such a nice thing to do. He did not have to do that, and I am in his debt. So thanks a lot, man. PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PC all get the Call of Duty Advanced Warfare DLC, their first DLC today. You may ask why I didn't mention any Xbox machines in that, because they already have it. They had the exclusive timed release early DLC deal. They've had that pretty much, I don't know about since the beginning with Call of Duty 4. Maybe they did, but I know at least from 4 on, Microsoft kind of bellied up extra cash and made it so they could get that stuff first. But if you were pining for it on PS, the PlayStation platforms and the PC, then you're in good hands today, because today is the day. This is what the Havoc collection gets you. 4 new multiplayer maps: Core, Urban, Sideshow, and Drift. Those could all be games by themselves. One of them could be Carl Urban. Exo Zombies mode. This is the co-op mode where you're fighting zombies that used to be Atlas Corporation employees. Now they're wearing like backpacks and stuff. We've got celebrities like Bill Paxton, John Malkovich, Rose McGowan, and John Bernthal. And you got to fight with them against these zombies, which I assume is some, is that some, that's some co-op. That's all co-op, isn't it? That's not single player. And new weapons, the AE-4 directed energy assault rifle and custom variant, the AE-4 Widowmaker. So, hey, if you're sitting around waiting, wait no more. Guild Wars 2, that MMO that is still doing good, kicking it. Got a new expansion coming out and all that stuff, which is great. They're adding a first-person mode, which I didn't know they didn't have. I don't remember when I was playing it if I had one or not. I guess I didn't. But that's something I think you've been able to do in WoW since day one. So it's a little bit weird that it's coming this late. Or that maybe we'd... I mean, who's using first-person in WoW or other MMOs? I understand the ones that are more twitchy, like ESO, like Elder Scrolls Online needs it, right? I think they do. I think you kind of need it. Or it's at least a viable alternative to the third person. But in these other games, I mean, you know, that Guild Wars 2 works a lot like World of Warcraft, where you click a dude and you hit your keys one through whatever, and it's, you know, it's kind of a hotkey action bar kind of game, and it's not really, you know, first-person mode doesn't yield you much, other than, I guess, a different perspective. So, whatever. They're getting that coming in March, March 10th. With their latest update. So if you're waiting around for that, hey man, you don't have to wait anymore. Hey poor, you don't have to wait anymore. Tomb Raider movie got a new writer, and the movie's being fast-tracked. Moving forward, the upcoming Tomb Raider movie, finally, soon, will be here. After a long hiatus between the last time we had a Tomb Raider movie with Angelina Jolie and then whoever's going to be in this. And we don't have casting details at all, but Evan Daughtry is going to write the script. You know him from his most recent writing credits, or you may know him, from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was a real stink bomb. Divergent, which I don't know. How'd that do? I don't know. And Snow White and the Huntsman, which was all right, actually. I didn't hate that. And maybe that one, contextually, is maybe the closest to what a Tomb Raider movie might be. So I'm actually kind of hopeful on that. That Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reboot. Ooh. Yeah, that's a turd you can't polish quite enough and get it to be what you want it to be. According to a few sources, a major PlayStation 4 update is coming, and soon. One's sort of an official source, the other is unofficial sources, but anyway, they are suggesting new firmware is just maybe weeks away, maybe less. And that's exciting. System-wide features are what the big talk is. Talk of the next PlayStation build has commenced, and this started Wednesday with Fred Dutton. He's a community manager at Sony. I follow him. Not that that matters. Anyway, he told fans on the PlayStation blog that the next update is not too far out. So that's vague, right? But then a well-known Sony fan who claims to have inside sources, he claims on Twitter that the update will arrive on March 29th or somewhere right around there. He goes by the name of Tidux, T-I-D-U-X. And he said the new one would offer a giant update with big new features, maybe stuff we haven't even heard about. So PS4 lovers unite. Perhaps your day has come. Nintendo has dropped amiibo prices. Speaking of those little miniature deals, their supply continues to be a bit of a problem, and some figures are, you know, clogging the market while others are going very quickly. So they have quietly dropped the suggested retail price of three of the most common. So Donkey Kong, Peach, and Yoshi. They are, for those not in the know, three of the very first wave of figures from November. So they were right at the cusp of that. They are all now $9.99. That was down from the $12.99 standard price. So I don't know, you know, does that mean they're phasing them out? It doesn't seem like it, but maybe they would do new versions of these. Here's Donkey Kong standing on a coconut. Here's one with his pants down and his monkey wiener out. I don't know. Those variants perhaps are on their way. That's my speculation only. I have nothing to actually base that on. But anyway, price drop serves everyone, right? That's good for me. That's good for you. It's good for all of us. GTA 5 PC release delayed again. If you're looking forward to your GTA V on your PC, then you're screwed. Well, you're screwed at least until April 14th, because that's the next time it was delayed. I mean, it was originally supposed to ship in the fall, right? Fall of 2014. Then it was supposed to be January. Last I heard, March, like right around the end of March. And now this delay is pushing it even more, 3 weeks later. They said this in an official statement. Our apologies to PC gamers worldwide who have been counting down the days until the launch of this game, but a bit more time is needed to ensure the game is as polished as possible. This according to Rockstar. So anyway, if you pre-ordered the game, they're going to help you out. They're going to throw you a bone by giving you an extra $200,000 in in-game cash to use in the GTA Online stuff. So that sucks. It's all right. I mean, I'm glad they're doing something. Hey, and hey, if it means a more solid game for those looking forward to it, I'm all for it. I'm still a little bit hazy on how much mod support there will be, because that's really what made 4 amazing on the PC. So if 5 has that kind of mod input stuff, hooks and APIs and whatever, holy crap, you guys, we may be in for some fun. Valve is showing off their virtual reality hardware at GDC, whatever that may be. They've announced three things they're doing. GDC, by the way, is next week. I've got some friends going. My friend Corinne is going all week long. She's looking forward to it. It's always a little crazy, GDC. But anyway, they're going to show off Steam machines with the final Steam controller. So that's 1 and 2. Oh, I guess that's one thing, because there's three things. Steam machine with final Steam controller. So we'll see what that thing finally looks like. Is it going to have the haptic feedback discs? Will it be straight up knobs instead? Analog sticks? What are they going to do there? I'm very curious. Brand new living room devices, which that could mean anything. That could mean streaming. That could mean, I don't know what it means. And a previously unannounced Steam excuse me, VR hardware system. So when they dropped their AR program, there was a lot of talk about how the VR team kicked it up a notch, started to see the writing on the wall that the real competition is going to be in VR and we'll have some kind of Oculus Rift competition. Keep in mind, one of the chief architects of VR at Valve at the time, back in the day, has left Valve and now works for Oculus. I don't know what that means. I'm sure they have all the resources they need, but I'm excited. I mean, look at their numbers. 125 million users on Steam. That is such a huge thing to leverage with something like Good VR or whatever. That's up from 100 million in September of last year. So think about that. 25 million in less than 6 months. That's enormous growth for an already established ecosystem. I mean, Steam is just killing it. Now, wouldn't it be interesting, along with the fact, oh, by the way, they also have 4,500 games to play. Did you know that? That's insane. That's last year at the same time, 3,700 games. That's a lot of new games. I think that was that big that flood of not necessarily great games, like all the crappy tablet ports and stuff like that. But, you know, one should look at what those numbers actually mean. But nonetheless, that's a ton of users. And that's active users, by the way. They're claiming, whatever that means, have logged in more than once a month or something. I don't know how they do that. But wouldn't it be great if they were like, yes, we have these three things, and here are those three things and details about them. But also, here's something with a three in it, and it's called Half-Life 3. And then everyone loses their crap. How would that be? Oh, I'm all in for that. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a time. Time for a chat with Jeff Cannata. We sat down and we spoke just for a bit here about the Order 1886, or 18, is it 1886? I said 1866, I think, before. Whatever. Whatever that number is. The Order came out. Some people said it was too short. 5-hour campaign, too short. Others complained there's no multiplayer. Many complained that the game itself isn't very good. The graphics are amazing, but it's not a very fun game. Blah, blah, blah. All of this criticism, and some of it really over the top, really negative. And Jeff doesn't understand. He loves the game. We talk about all that and more right here. So listen up. I'll see you on the other side. All right, everybody. Joining me right now is one Jeff Cannata, who is, as it turns out, a fan of The Order 1886. And when the game came out, as I mentioned earlier, got a lot of consternation from a lot of reviewers and very middling scores from most major gaming outlets, a few exceptions. But for the most part, it's taken a bit of heat. And Jeff has been outspoken about, A, his like for the game, but also his confusion about as to why everybody hates it so much. And I've got him on the show right now. Jeff, how's it going?
It's going great, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to have you on. So this game was touted a long time ago when we first saw it from Sony on stage at E3. I guess it was 2013. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it looked beautiful, and everybody was talking about, wow, this is, you know, maybe the most next-gen looking game that they are working on. And I remember getting pretty excited about the visuals then. Nobody was sure what the game was about or what kind of genre it would fit in or whatever. Now it's come out. Now we know the genre. There was a lot of complaining early on about the length of the thing. Mm-hmm. But now the reviews seem to be more centered on why the game is not a good game, while it may be pretty not a great game. And I'm dying to know why you say they're up in the night. It is a good game, you say.
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to mention is that I bought this game using real human dollars, right? I didn't get a review copy. I have no dog in this fight. I purchased it myself. I almost didn't because of all the pre-release negativity that I had read.
Sure.
I was very excited about the game, having played a little bit of it at E3, and so I stuck to my guns and I went out and bought it, and I really like it. Now, my expectations may have been lowered, so maybe it exceeded expectations because of all the negativity, but I truly don't understand the hate for this game. You mentioned the visuals. You cannot overstate how gorgeous this game is. It really is a preview of what this generation of consoles is going to be like, in the same way that when Gears of War first came out, it was like, oh, this is what all games are going to end up looking like last gen, right? Which is what happened. Mm. This is, I think, what the kind of level of fidelity we're going to get.
And it's always that phase of early on in the console cycle, no matter what cycle you're looking at, even this one that has sort of a longer tail, it's a little less of a jump from the last gen in terms of overall fidelity, but nonetheless, there's an increase in power there, but there's always that that kind of first run of year or two games that look basically kind of last gen, a few extra effects thrown in there, maybe a little better frame rate or whatever, better versions of PC ports or something. But right. then finally we start getting to the Uncharted's, the Gears of War, like you mentioned, and other games. And this does feel like the tip of that spear to me.
Yeah, I think that that's undeniable. And it really is a sight to behold. And it's not just because of the graphics that I enjoyed playing this game, but it certainly weighed heavily into my enjoyment. I liked being in this universe. I liked wandering around. I liked the level of detail in everything. I mean, it is the lighting, the way the world has been built out, just walking through someone's house or Tesla's lab. You get to go to Tesla's lab and wander around. There's so much detail everywhere. And that went a long way for me enjoying just sort of being in that place. But I found the game to be really fun. Is it perfect? It is not perfect. No. And I understand there's probably a lot of people that are turned off by some of the QTE elements in the game. And I think the QTE elements in the game are handled kind of clumsily. Mm. I often had to learn by failing in this game because the QTEs come out of nowhere and you just sort of get them wrong the first time, yeah. every time, for me at least.
Sure.
But other than that, I think the shooting is great and the weapons are really fun. They feel very satisfying to shoot. There's a great feel to all the weapons, and there's some really clever, interesting, different weapons. The sort of, you know, steampunk future tech stuff is really cool. Mm-hmm. And this game is Uncharted. I mean, you brought up Uncharted. This is the template that Uncharted uses. It's wander around a really beautiful environment. Sometimes you have to traverse, you know, climb things. Climbing isn't to the extent that you get in Uncharted, but there's a fair amount of it in the game. And then you get to these rooms where there's shootouts. And I think the shooting is really fun. It works really well. Is it as good as Gears of War? No. Is it as great as a pure dedicated shooter? No. But is it as good as Uncharted? Heck yeah, it is. I think it's better than Uncharted in a lot of ways because the weapons are more fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, in a lot of ways, Uncharted 1 in a lot of ways was also kind of experimental in the sense that it didn't hit all the points it needed to. It wasn't quite as awesome maybe as it had been promised to, but it sure opened up this new window of like, all right, this is beautiful, and they refine a few of these points here, and we're off to the races. And sure enough, 2 and some would argue 3 are definitely improvements in that series in the ways that people wanted them to be improved.
Yeah.
Someone would think the Order, is in line to do the same thing.
Hopefully, I'm hoping that this sort of negative reaction doesn't damper any kind of a sequel, because I think the game's universe is really fun to be in. I like steampunk. I'm into that, that, you know, fictional universe, and they do it really well here. And like Uncharted, the acting is fantastic. The cutscenes are well done. The story, I think, now it doesn't have the comedy of an Uncharted. It doesn't have the charm of an Uncharted, but for a pure sci-fi sort of steampunk story, inventing a new lore and a new mythology here, I thought they did a fantastic job. There's some really clever things, like I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a justification for some video game elements, like, you know, how you can just regen your health in video games.
Yeah.
They kind of justify that story-wise, which I think is a really clever, cool thing to do. And, you know, the stuff with werewolves and that kind of Victorian era steampunk stuff, I was loving it, and I think there's some fun twists and turns. The story is conveyed really well. I don't get people's hate for this game. I truly do not.
Well, the two things I've heard the biggest problem with, if I'm to simplify them down or boil them down to the two big things people have complained about, you've kind of mentioned. One is the QTE stuff, and by the way, QuickTime events as a mechanic and as a thing sure is out of favor now. Like it, and I feel like in some ways unjustifiably. I know a lot of games rely on it too much. I know there's been some history with, you know, go back to as far as like Shenmue and go, well, I guess, you know, these QuickTime events are interesting, but perhaps it shouldn't be so much of the entire game. And there have certainly been other examples where it's been used well. I always liked the QuickTime events in, say, the God of War series. I thought those were handled well. Mm-hmm. There are other examples where that's not so good, but I don't know why it is such a sour pill for so many people, why it is looked upon so horribly. And, you know, I can almost hear people in the same breath express their love for, you know, Space Quest or Dragon's Lair, but in the same right. breath complain that games should never have QTE in them again. And I don't understand that. I don't think it's that big of a deal. And if they're done well, they're nice distractions. It's a thing to deal with. I understand, you know, if it's a fail state that has basically a binary solution, either you succeed one or not zero, and now you start over, that is frustrating.
Yeah, it's that loop that I think people don't like. It's when you do the same thing wrong two or three times and you're in that loop. I can understand that being not fun, but I'm with you. You know, one of my favorite games of all time is Heavy Rain, and I think a lot of people don't like Heavy Rain, but it was the totally rad show game of the year, the year it came out.
I remember that, yeah.
I think that QTE can work. I think it's, as I said, it's a little clumsy here just because it comes out of nowhere, and I often find myself it'll switch up between needing to react quickly to something and needing to react you have to like time a closing window. So I often just fail it the first time, which is a bummer, you know. Yeah. I don't like the learn by fail methodology.
Sure.
But yeah, I still didn't have that big of a problem with it.
Well, as far as length goes, and I'm reminded, I'm replaying Wind Waker on the Wii U right now, finally, and was reminded that there are lots of QTE experiences in modern Zelda games that people, I think, forget are in there, and perhaps that's better design. Maybe they disguise them in boss fights and things so they don't feel like quick time events, or if they do, they don't feel like the binary fail state that they do in other games. But I think it's important to remind people that some of your most beloved games feature elements of QTE, and I just think it's unfairly treated. That would be number one. But number two, everybody has levied this big complaint, and it happened early when the gameplay footage was leaked by people who shouldn't have had the game yet, beating the thing in 5 hours, first playthrough. Do you think it was too short? And if so, you know, how do they pad that out? If it's a, you know, third-person shooter with a pretty distinct sort of linear plan, did it need to be longer than it was?
For me, I got my $65 worth. I paid $65, you know, with tax. I felt like I had a really fun experience. It took me longer than 5 hours, not a lot longer than 5 hours, but it took me longer. And I was so wrapped up in the world. I had fun with the fights. The thing that it does that I think makes it feel shorter than most is that it, especially in the first half of the game, it feels a little ADD. It feels like it doesn't let you do any one thing for a long time. And I think from one perspective, that's to the credit of the designers. They're constantly changing things up and throwing new things at you. But I think from gamers who are used to being given tools at the beginning of a game and then allowed to sort of play with them for a while, it feels like, oh, we're being rushed through this. And I think a lot of people, at least a lot of the feedback that I got after I professed my like for this game, a lot of people were frustrated by the slow walking of the main character, which I find is so strange, such a strange complaint. I liked wandering through that environment. I wanted to take my time and look at all the detail. But yeah, it's like, oh, here's a gun, use it. Okay, now we're on to the next thing. And now you're using this cool little gadget that has a little mini game and do that. Okay, now you're wandering around and putting together some story beats. Okay, stop doing that. So it feels a little ADD, but I think that's actually kind of a cool thing, especially in a linear game where it's you're learning new things and you're doing new things for the first 2 or 3 hours of the game. And I think that's cool.
Yeah, now everything needs to have RPG elements, and not everything has to have some of the more complicated things shooters have been doing lately, nor does it have to be the short-lived, twitchy sort of at least multiplayer experience that Call of Duty and others provide. Having not played it, what you described to me sounds like a breath of fresh air, because I kind of want to get back to some of those basics of give me a cool world, give me a cool story, give me things I haven't seen before, make it look beautiful, and then let me play through it and not have it overstay its welcome. All of this sounds like positives to me. So I'm probably going to check the game out. The other question I would have for you, do you think the game would have perhaps had less of this consternation by players if it would have featured, like Call of Duty, a 5-6 hour campaign, but then a multiplayer component? This game doesn't have multiplayer. Would it have benefited from it?
Yes. I think that for some reason, people put a lot of value in that, in the sense of, oh, it's going to give me something to do after I'm done with the main story. And I get that. I mean, I get it by and large, but I also feel like then there's this weird complaint that, oh, the multiplayer felt tacked on. It's like, well, it's tacked on because if they don't tack it on, then it gets this hit. It's like, they can't, you know, you can't win either way. I've heard a lot of people that love the Uncharted multiplayer. I played a little of it. It didn't really grab me. I'm totally fine playing Uncharted through one time and having that experience and loving that experience and enjoying that experience. And that, for me, is what The Order was like. It was sitting down to a really interesting, story-based, linear, well-told, well-realized, visually compelling story. And I dug it. I dug that story. I dug the interactive bits of it. I dug the shooting. I thought it was really high level of artistry on display, and I appreciated it. Is it going to be my game of the year? No. Is it going to be in my top five games of the year? Probably not. I would be shocked if it was, right?
Sure.
It's not the best game I've ever played, but man, it was solid, and it was worth my $65. Especially, I think, when it goes down in price a little, I think people are going to really have a renaissance of appreciation for this game. Well, I think so many people that I've heard from that are like, "Oh, it's garbage," haven't even played it. You know?
It's weird. We now live in a time where it is impossible to be a sleeper hit without a lot of noise, or impossible to be a letdown without a lot of noise, or whatever thing in between. And I don't know how we get around that, but I can tell you this, dude, I don't need another 25-hour game right now, and I'm not saying that every game should be short, but that feels real good to me, considering how many huge games I have to finish, how many games I have yet to play that I need to play and know that I need to finish. I mean, Hell, I'm playing a game from 2002, which is spectacular. Wind Waker is one of the greatest games ever made, but hot damn, it's long. They're just long games everywhere. Once in a while, it's nice to pick up something where I can have that kind of cinematic, exciting experience, and not worry about, well, how am I going to plan out my next 3 weekends in order to finish this freaking thing? So in a way, everything you've mentioned sounds like a benefit to me, and I just think it's a strange kind of backlash. I think people expected something that they were never even told they were going to get. I think people thought, oh, well, this setting and these things we're seeing here and whatever, it's going to be some kind of combination of Uncharted storytelling and deep RPG mechanics or something, character development, or, you know, all of these kinds of things. And they were never promised that, but I think that's what people expected.
Well, I think that the very first trailer that was shown for The Order, right, was the stagecoach that pulls up, four people get out of it, all with different weapons, and they're about to face down some sort of enemy. And people went, oh, it looks like a squad-based shooter. Mm-hmm. It looks like Left 4 Dead or Gears of War. Mm-hmm. And I think that messaging initially may have been wrongheaded. I think that they may have shot themselves a little bit in the foot with that, because that's not this game. This game is Uncharted. I mean, it is the template of Uncharted. Mm. Exactly. A beat for beat. The only thing that it misses is that sort of relatable everyman storyline, but it subs in a really cool sci-fi tech steampunk storyline. And I loved it, man. I got to climb on a Zeppelin and do all this crazy stuff. And I got to explore Victorian London, and I got to be part of a cool soldier team that hunts down supernatural creatures. It was awesome. And it had a fun bit of fiction, fun bit of lore that it introduced. And I really hope they get a chance to make a sequel.
It's a very tricky balance, I'm guessing, for these guys to pump up a game like this, or to talk about it and announce it and get ready to release it. You know, on the one hand, you've got people like Shadow of Mordor's team trying E3 after E3 and event after event, trying to explain to people why the Nemesis system was so good, and having people just go, "Yeah, I don't get it, whatever," and not really caring at these events and thinking it looked like not that great of a game. It kind of, you know, Assassin's Creed also ran. Then the thing finally comes out and everyone's all, you know, underwhelmed expectations are far exceeded, because it turns out this thing is rad. You just had to get intimate with it to find out how really amazing that system was. It's like this game has the opposite problem. I feel like they could have come out, and instead of making it look like it might be a big co-op four-person thing or all these other potential things that initial teaser gave us, all they were really trying to do is say, hey, look how rad these in-game graphics are. This is going to look really pretty. But instead, we all walked away with all these other ideas. If they just would have said, you know, we're aiming for a shooter, pure shooter here, like really sell it for what it is, I think people would be less freaked out right now.
And, that's a whole other conversation, right? Is this weird dance of pre-release hype that has to happen? That I think you hit the nail completely on the head. Is that we as gamers and as people who talk about games in the quote unquote media or online or whatever, I think there is this feeling of, oh my God, I want to champion that underdog that turns out to be great. And I also think that there's this weird, I want to knock down the big dog that came out and said it was going to be great, but was only very good. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the PR campaigns on these big games, like they need to create this buzz. They need to create pre-sales. They need to make these games open large, like you would open a movie. But often that backfires. You know, often that creates this weird expectation, and there's this backlash against all the expectations that were created. And then you have the other side of the coin, where these smaller, you know, under the radar games can bubble up and get Game of the Year all over the place. Which isn't to say Shadow of Mordor is undeserving. It's a fantastic game. I loved that game. Sure. But you know, I think that there's a lot to be said about marketing hype too.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess if there's a lesson to take away from our conversation today, fine listeners at home, it would be this: approach these things with an open mind. Your $60, $60+ is valuable. You should spend it where it makes the most sense, but don't necessarily let Twitter and Facebook and whatever make decisions or determinations for you, nor, you know, full-blown reviewers. This isn't, you know, a pity party for The Order. The Order is going to sell just fine. On a mainstream level, I don't think the game has that much to worry about. There are a lot of people pining for something cool to play on their hot new console. So I think it's going to do fine, and I'll bet there is a sequel in the works. But I don't know. To me, it's the bigger picture of how are we told to you know, what games to play, who are we believing, what are our trusted voices. And anybody who approaches these things from the perspective of, if you really want to know, find out for yourself. If you can invest the money, do. And maybe you may just walk away with a great experience that everyone else told you weren't going to have.
And that's been my point this whole time. Like, I don't think this is a perfect game. It has flaws. But I'm coming at it from the experience of almost not buying it, right? And I'm really glad I did. I really, really dug the game. And I am frustrated by this weird forced consensus that when I come on Twitter and I say, I really dig this game, I got a lot of people saying, me too, I really like it too. But I also got a lot of people who said, way to polish that turd, Kanata. And I, you know, and I engage with those guys and realize they didn't play it.
They haven't
They're just relaying other information that they've read rather than having any kind of first person experience with it. And it's like, well, no, I'm talking about my own experience here.
Yeah.
I don't care if somebody else didn't like it. Like, fine. If you don't like it, fair enough. I'm saying I liked it, and I have the personal experience to be able to say that.
Yeah, there's some funky psychology going on there for sure, and it permeates gaming culture and all other cultures, really, but it seems so pronounced here, and you're totally right about it. Just play it. See what you think. If you're pining for something that looks great on your PS4 that you can't wait to show off to your friends, it seems like a pretty good bet. I'm going to grab it and try it, because who knows? I may end up hating it. I may get this game and go, man, Jeff's smoking the crack, and that's okay. not that he's smoking the crack, but you know, disagree, not a problem. We'll find out soon enough. Jeff, it is always a pleasure to hang out and chat with you. If I had to ask you one game on your radar, now that The Order's out and played, what are you most looking forward to this year?
What am I most looking forward to? Well, The Witcher.
Yeah, that's me too. And that's March, isn't it? March happens?
Yeah. No, I think it got pushed back again, right? It's April, June now, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, soon enough. Whatever. Take the time you need. I want that game to be polished. Not like a turd, but like a proper, pearl of gaming.
However
excellence.
They need to polish it is fine with me.
I'm excited about that one too. All right. It is Jeff Kanata. Don't forget, catch him on DLC over there at the 5x5 Network and all other places. Jeff Kanata on Twitter. Anything else, sir?
You can also say we have concerns at wehaveconcerns.com. Oh, but thanks, man. I love your show, and I appreciate you calling me up.
And we're back. Thank you, Jeff, for that. That was really fun, and I think we'll do that occasionally, here and there, having Jeff on, talk about some of the bigger subjects that pop up. He's always down for it. I love talking to him, and really great to have him on. Mucho appreciated. All right. What now? I know what. All right, let's take a moment and do your emails and calls. We take phone calls here on the show. I don't know if you knew that. They are in the form of voicemails. They're usually short and interesting. That's why I play them. By the way, if you send me a two-minute call, it's not going to make it. Just to let you know now. Minute or less, okay? 801-471-0462. That's 801-471-0462. Or boopshow@gmail.com. That's the email address. You can send your emails or attachments, all of which are welcome. Boopshow@gmail.com. Let's start here with an email. Let's do a call first about cartridges in the modern era.
This is a dumb question, so probably won't make the air, but maybe I'll be surprised. You were talking about NHL 94 and all that stuff, and it made me think, you talked about Sega CD and all that jazz. It made me think of cartridges, and, you know, do you know what they could fit? So if they were to make, like, could you put, oh, so hard to ask this question, where's the hard, Scott? How much could they, what kind of a game could they produce with a cartridge nowadays? Like, would it look like, with Nintendo 64, as far as you could get with a cartridge graphically? I know sound and all that stuff takes precedence and takes up space. And love the show. Tell Brimbor.
Okay, here's the funny answer, the truth to that. And by the way, there are still cartridges being made. You know, they buy them on your Vita, they buy them on your 3DS, and, you know. My guess is all future handhelds will continue to follow that model unless they go to strict downloads. I don't know. If they do that, they're going to need a lot more storage. But here's the truth. The N64 used Flash, the same memory format we use today. It's different than one they used on Super NES and older cartridges, but it's that's what they were using. Now, the capacity on those things was real small at the time. I couldn't even tell you what it was. It was low, though. In fact, I could probably find out while we're talking here. Average cartridge size N64. Okay, just as an example, because that was probably the best sort of cartridge based system. It looks like the average space was 32 megabytes. Megabytes, okay? That's as much memory as I have on the computer I'm recording on right now. So things have changed. You can get, you know, a 64 gigabyte memory card for real cheap now. And again, it's the same technology. So on a much smaller size and with a much larger capacity, they'd have all the room they'd need to put something as big as World of Warcraft in its 10-year status right now, or a giant game with super high-resolution textures, a shooter or something would fit there as well. Yeah, capacity is the problem, or was the problem. That is less of a problem now. So at least if it was today, like if Wii U games or even Xbox or PlayStation games used cartridges, they would have plenty of room per cartridge for like a 64 gig or 32 gig experience, or much less than that in a lot of cases. So there really is nothing that you couldn't do. I mean, you could ask the same question. What is a computer, a PC game, when it's residing on your hard drive? That's just a big cartridge that happens to have many games on it, but it's no different, especially if you have an SSD drive. You've got all the music and the data and the textures and the color and the sound and the everything, all the gameplay, all the whatever. That's all on the card. And your car just happens to be a hard drive. It's no different than that. I think I've blown your mind now that I've said that. I've blown my mind after I've said that. Tyler wrote in, sent us an email, says, "Hey, Scott, was wanting to know your opinion on what you think it would take to bring Nintendo back to the leader of the console playing gaming space again." Lots of things. One of the things he suggests in this email, Tyler talks about unified account systems and things like that. That is definitely stuff they got to do, but that's a small thing. I think I said a couple episodes again, and I'll just reiterate it here. Here's how they do it. They make their machine the most attractive third-party device possible, because that's really all you can do to win anymore. You know, Microsoft and Sony can fight it out, but really it's about where are third parties putting their games. First party is important, and for Nintendo, it's extremely important. But imagine a world, just for a second. Like, if Sony was all first-party development, nobody would buy that console. If Microsoft was, nobody would buy that console, at least not in the numbers they do now. Nintendo has such a strong first-party game, period. I mean, their overall first-party efforts are just the best in the world. They don't have that problem. They can kind of be this third-tier boutique system and do okay like they are now. But what would really put them over the top is if they did both that and made this machine attractive to third parties. They quit playing with gimmicks. They quit messing with second screens and styluses and motion control and nunchucks and all this bullcrap. Forget about all that. Get a standard-ass, sweet-ass controller on that thing. Make it attractive for third parties. Have it be a powerful machine at the debut when it comes out. Is it at least on par with what everyone else is doing? Suddenly, you're back in the Super NES days, and everybody wants to make games for your machine. That's all they have to do. I don't know that they're willing to do that. And maybe I don't want them to, ultimately, because sometimes they get crazy and we get innovation. You got to remember, the D-pad came from them. Analog control came from them. Motion control came from them. Wireless controllers came from them. Rumble packs came from them. I mean, though, that stuff is real. And in some cases, gimmicky, but then sometimes it changes the world. Sometimes it doesn't. But so I'm not sure I want them to stop trying to innovate in that way. So it's a two-part. It's a two-part answer. Part of me doesn't want them to, but part of me says, well, if they want that, if that is what Nintendo wants, and I'm not sure they do, but if they do, the blueprint's an easy one to do. And they could turn the whole thing around, in my humble opinion. Steve wrote in and says this. He's in Marshall, Michigan. Or his name is Marshall, Michigan. Anyway. It says Steve, a.k.a. Marshall, Michigan. Well, anyway. While looking today for gaming news that would satisfy my crappy attitude of late, I came across an article about the remastered Halo game for the Xbox One. It has been released and broken for 100 days today. This would have been a couple days ago. And to make matters worse, the achievement they launched to thank players for their support, a.k.a. money, is bugged. So my question is this. Do you ever think there'll be a rainbow for the weary Xbox player at the end of this game? Will this ever be resolved, Steve? I don't know. I think some of it depends on the pressure that players continue to have, and also how did it sell? If it stopped selling abruptly when people started having trouble, and only Microsoft is aware of this, maybe they're less motivated to do anything about it. I think they need to make good on it in the same way Sony needs to make good on Drive Club. They absolutely have to come through with what they promised there, the 3PSN version and all that stuff. They have to do it, and I think Microsoft has to do the same, because the goodwill they earn with that, way more important down the road to their financial bottom line than having to fix it now. Companies can't do that for very long before huge trouble brews. So, yes, that is my answer. And I think it's true. So we'll see how it goes. When? I don't know, dude. Let's say soon. Rob wrote in, final email, says it's been talked about for years, but do you think FIFA and Madden and possibly Call of Duty will eventually go to purely a subscription-based service, meaning you pay a monthly fee for that game and give them the latest and greatest along with all the DLC, etc.? I think games as a service, particularly with the big franchises, is the way things are headed, whether we like it or not. Love the show. Boop. Rob. The problem with subscriptions is you need constant updates. If you're asking me to pay monthly for, say, Call of Duty, I better be getting stuff all the time, or enough stuff to feel like my subscription to it is valuable, like it would be for, say, World of Warcraft or something. So you need to constantly be pushing new stuff out. And I think that crowd isn't going to wait around for stuff. I don't know that they're ready to pay. It's also a lot younger crowd. I think they don't have the disposable income necessarily. On a monthly basis, they may save up for a $50 thing once a year, but it's tricky. What I wish those games would do is come out with your proper releases, but don't do it every year. Come out with a proper release stuff in the form of DLC and free updates for like 2 years, then come out with your next version of the game and truly innovate instead of just barely doing anything every year. Something more along that line is what I would want these guys to start doing. Call of Duty's a little bit different, but the sports games for sure. Because really, you're just roster changes and a couple of like franchise modes or something. It's like, yeah, those guys got to get their crap figured out. I'm curious, is anybody still playing NHL 2015, I guess it is? Because it launched missing a bunch of stuff, and then they added back, you know, modes people wanted and things. Is it in a place now where it'd be worth getting? Because, man, I love a good hockey game. Like, I love hockey games. I love them. And I didn't get this one because of that backlash, and, you know, maybe I listened to the masses or something like Jeff and I talked about, but I kind of hanker for it. I got a lot of Homeworld to play first, so don't worry about it. But yeah, if you have a minute and you're playing it and you want to let me know, I'm right here, baby. I want to apologize for my voice today, man. I really I hope it's not too annoying. I've been using the cough switch a lot, so you haven't had to hear me cough. See, listen. That's how it works. Anyways, frogpants.com/boop is our website. Boopshow@gmail.com is our email address. Call us 801-471-0462. I think that last three digits spells gob on an alpha phone. So 4710-GOB, I think, G-O-B. Anyway, Twitter, @boopshow is where you can find us there. You can find the Schnauzer Radio Orchestra anywhere you look for this music we use. The music on the show comes from their album, Music for a 1950s Video Game. I freaking love it. As you can tell, I play it all the time. And as always, you can support this show by going to patreon.com/frogpants. And don't forget Nerdtacular tickets. Talked about it at the top of the show, but bears reminding. We'd like to see you and meet you. All right, I think that's going to do it. No music today because we already talked a lot, and it's a long show because of that interview, so I don't want to have you have to listen to more. But don't worry, back Monday with music at the end of the show and a regular episode. Please come on back. Is that everything? I think that's everything. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you then.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.